Follow The Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts to listen to our episodes early and ad-free and get access to monthly exclusive episodes. Go to patreon.com/madnesspod. We've got links in our show notes.
The opinions expressed in the following episode do not necessarily reflect those of the Minds of Madness podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
The concept of an evil twin is something that's fascinated and terrified human beings for a millennia. A twin or doppelganger who embodies the polar opposite of a person. It's a trope that's appeared throughout recorded history, in mythology, literature, and even the Bible. But when it's often used as a literary device, and often a bad one at that, has it ever actually happened in the real world? The answer is yes. In the case of the Han twins, a pair of identical sisters born in South Korea but raised in Southern California, the concept of an evil twin became all too real and all too deadly. Join me now as we dive into the bizarre story of the Han sisters' murder conspiracy, where we'll uncover the dark secrets that led to their tragic downfall. You'll hear a story of sibling rivalry like no other, and how the bond of sisterhood unraveled into a shocking murder plot. On November 6, 1996, in Orange County, California, 22-year-old Sunny Han had slept in until 2:30 in the afternoon. After showering, she started getting dressed in her bedroom, but soon began hearing strange noises coming from her living room. It was the voice of her roommate, Helen, but something seemed off. Then she heard the voice of someone she didn't recognize, a man. Helen began pleading with the man not to hurt her and to take anything he wanted. He responded by telling her to shut up or he'd have to hurt her. Shocked and terrified by what she was hearing, Sunny reached for her phone sitting on the bed before locking herself inside her bathroom and dialing 911. As quietly as she could, Sunny whispered to the dispatcher that an intruder had entered her home and she believed her roommate was being raped. Before giving her address, she was suddenly disconnected.
39?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is 10.
Do you have the cell phone number?
No, we didn't get that. I got, just what she said, when she whispered, and I transferred it over as quick as I can. I got Benito, 676 Benito?
Benito, yeah.
Benito, okay.
We're on the way there, and I got a phone number inside. I was hoping maybe you'd gotten her cell phone, too.
No, I didn't, because the way she was whispering, she said, there's somebody in my house.
Yeah.
I knew it was hot to get it over there. I just wanted to find out what city.
Yeah, it's ours. If it's Benito, it's her
line. Yeah, well, I wanted to stay with you in case I got anything else, so.
That's it. If she calls back, will you please catch her through again?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
All right, thanks a lot.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
At the same time Sunny was whispering to 911, she overheard another man's voice, also coming from the living room. The voice was asking Helen where her roommate was. That meant there were two intruders, and now they were looking for Sunny. But before she could do anything, Sunny's bathroom door was busted open.
The next thing that happened, while I was talking to the operator, my bathroom door was knocked open and a man came into my bathroom. I heard a loud bang and, you know, a man comes in with a gun pointing to my face. I turned the power off. So, you know, he doesn't see that, you know, the number 911 on the phone. And then he snatched it away from me. And then he said, you called the cops, didn't you? I said, no, I called my friend. He grabbed me and he threw me down on the carpet in my bedroom. Face down, knees on the floor, hands behind. I told him not to hurt me. Take anything you want, don't hurt me. And then he kept saying, you know, shut up, don't say anything, you know, otherwise I'll have to kill you or shoot you. And then I said, okay. And then he told someone to bring the other bitch in here. I guess that was referred to my roommate. So basically, he called for tapes and then the rope, so he tied my hands and then he duct taped my mouth. And then he brought in Helen.
Sunny and her 19-year-old roommate, Helen Kim, were bound and gagged by rolls of duct tape before being placed into the bathtub. What the intruders wanted from them, the roommates had no idea. Were they there to rob them, kidnap them, or was it something worse? Thankfully, before the women could find out, the sound of sirens approaching filled the apartment, and the man who pointed the gun at Sunny began to panic. Immediately, he started untying the roommates and ran out of the room, ordering the young women to tell police. It was all just one big practical joke. Outside Sunny's apartment, police had arrived in full force in just a few minutes after receiving the 911 call. One officer approaching the apartment spotted a young Korean-American woman sitting in the driver's seat of a blue Ford Mustang in the parking lot. When the officer walked around the apartment to the rear entrance, the woman from the Mustang got out and followed him, seemingly concerned about what was going on inside. But when they got around to the back door, a team of police were already standing there with their weapons drawn, preparing to enter the building. They ordered the woman to leave the area. This was no place for civilians or gawkers. So she went back to the parking lot, fired up the Mustang, and hit the gas. Just as she was peeling out of the parking lot, the two roommates emerged from the apartment, safe and sound. The victims were understandably frazzled, but at least they were in one piece. And it was right about that time when one of the officers experienced what he felt like deja vu. Because the victim coming out of the apartment looked an awful lot like the girl he just chased away from the crime scene a minute earlier. In fact, they looked downright identical. And while detectives were still processing the crime scene, police got wind of a disturbing rumor from one of their confidential informants. A young Korean-American woman named Gina Han had just recently escaped from jail. But while she'd been in custody, the informant had overheard Gina making plans to kill her own sister, her twin sister. Driving down the highway in her blue Ford Mustang, Gina Han set her sights south for the Mexican border. The last thing she'd see in her rearview mirror as she left the parking lot was her sister Sunny walking out of the door, alive. Her plan had failed. The attempted attack on Sunny had been Gina's most recent escalation of a rivalry that went back as far as either sister could remember. And like usual, Sunny had won again. You know, we're only in April, but we've had a few days that felt like summer. And it's the same thing every year. As soon as it gets warm outside, I get the bikes out of storage and dust them off and then hit the road. Literally every free moment I have, I'm out on my road bike. But there's one thing I never forget, and that's two water bottles filled with Liquid IV. And one stick of Liquid IV in 16 ounces of water hydrates faster than water alone. A single stick of Liquid IV makes ordinary hydration extraordinary, with 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness. And it's so convenient. Each serving is individually packaged, so all you have to do is rip open the pouch, stir it into 16 ounces of water, and you're done. I'm pretty sure I've tasted every single flavor they have, but my favorite go-to is always sugar-free white peach. And I even have my friends loving it, because I always carry a few extra packets of it when I'm traveling. And the last time I was out for a bike ride, my buddy was like, "Hey, have you got any extra Liquid IV packets on ya?" And strangely enough, I did. Seriously, you gotta check out Liquid IV. It's the number one powdered hydration brand in America. 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, 8 vitamins and nutrients, non-GMO and free from gluten, dairy and soy, and no artificial colors or sweeteners. Turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code MADNESS at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code MADNESS at liquidiv.com. Gina and Sonny Hunt's intense sibling rivalry had begun 22 years earlier in Incheon, South Korea. In fact, it had been forced upon them from the very day the two twins were born. In the delivery room, Sonny was born just 5 minutes before twin sister Gina, and in those mere 5 minutes, Sonny had claimed victory in their first competition, the race to be born. But it wasn't just bragging rights that Sonny had won. It was something far more serious. The title of firstborn, a distinction their mother, Boo Kim Han, took incredibly seriously. From day one, Sonny was treated as the superior child, and Gina was expected to play second fiddle. In the eyes of their mother, Sonny was the clear favorite, and she never pretended otherwise. Predictably, this arrangement caused perpetual tension between the twins. In 1986, when the twins were 11 years old, Sonny and Gina immigrated to America with their mother. But instead of getting the fresh start they were hoping for, their mother soon began having problems of her own when she developed a debilitating gambling addiction. As the twins entered their early teenage years in Orange County, California, they were often left alone by their mother for days at a time while she disappeared into her gambling addiction. Imagine an alternative version of Home Alone, but instead of a fancy mansion, the twins were left with bare cupboards and an empty refrigerator, fending for themselves in a neighborhood where everyone spoke English, which for Sonny and Gina was still largely a foreign language. They only had each other to rely on for support, and for a time, they were forced to abandon their long-standing feud in order to survive. Eventually, Bo Kim realized she wasn't capable of taking care of her own children, so she reached out to distant relatives who agreed to let the children come live with them. It was the best thing that could have ever happened to the twins. They were now both living in a small California town near the US-Mexican border, and for the first time in their lives, they were treated like equals, something that both Gina and Sonny seemed thrilled about. As they entered high school, the twins began to thrive. Sonny and Gina turned out to be academic powerhouses, outshining their peers at every turn. But while they left the rest of the class in the dust, their sibling rivalry began to heat up again, each sister hoping to outperform the other. As the years went on, Sonny and Gina continued to excel and were both neck and neck for the race to become the school's valedictorian. But on graduation day, neither sister was able to get the victory they wanted because Sonny and Gina were named co-valedictorians for their high school class. On the surface, it was a shining example of resiliency overcoming adversity, but for these two hyper-competitive sisters, it was bittersweet. Neither wanted to share the spotlight with the other. It was a reminder of their never-ending rivalry, a battle that seemed to have no end in sight. After graduation, the sisters' lives took completely different paths. Sonny Hun was offered a scholarship to the University of Laverne near Los Angeles. She packed her bags and embarked on her college journey, where she took on a high-class persona to fit in with her wealthier peers. She leased a BMW, wore designer clothes, and luxury makeup. She was smart, popular, and seemingly on the fast track to success. Gina, on the other hand, decided to take a completely different path when she joined the U.S. Air Force instead of going to college. But almost as soon as she started basic training, she realized she hated everything about it. She'd made a huge mistake, and she knew it. So, in order to get out of the U.S. Air Force, Gina told her commanding officer that she was a lesbian, something not permitted in the U.S. military until the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell in 2011. Gina's plan worked, and she was released from duty. But she was miserably falling behind the success of her older sister, Sunny, who seemed to be doing so well. And just like her mother had done, Gina gravitated to the world of gambling. In a casino outside of San Diego, Gina became a blackjack dealer, but squandered every penny she earned by gambling her hard-earned money away at the tables. For Gina, it seemed the cards were always stacked against her. Desperate for money, Gina began writing fraudulent checks, stealing credit cards, and taking money from friends and family. The total sum of her debts would eventually reach $40,000. But it didn't take long for Gina's actions to catch up with her when her uncle realized she'd stolen $10,000 from him, and he pressed charges against her. Gina was sentenced to 10 days in jail and 3 years probation. It should have been the massive wake-up call and a second chance for Gina to finally get her life back on track. After Gina's release, she turned to the one person who'd been with her through thick and thin for all the years, her sister Sunny, the twin who was thriving, popular, and on the road to success. Sunny graciously allowed Gina to live with her until she got her feet back on the ground. But it would take less than a month before the old sibling rivalry began rearing its ugly head. Jealous of Sunny's luxurious Orange County lifestyle, Gina began taking Sunny's clothes, her money, and even her BMW without permission. And one day in May 1996, Sunny had had enough. They began physically fighting, and Sunny broke Gina's nose with the house telephone. Neighbors called police, and when the cops showed up, Gina feared the worst. She was on probation and didn't want to go back to jail. However, to Gina's incredible surprise, it was Sunny the cops carried away in handcuffs. But that was far from the biggest surprise. Because Sunny hadn't been arrested simply for busting Gina's nose, it turned out there was a warrant out for her arrest. And that's when Gina learned that Sunny's life wasn't quite as perfect or glamorous as she'd been pretending. All those fancy clothes, the Beamer, and the lavish lifestyle, Sunny had funded her shopping spree by stealing a friend's credit card and racking up $13,000 on it. And on top of that, she'd also done so poorly at university that she'd totally lost her scholarship, causing her to drop out and go to community college. In the end, Sunny was only charged with a misdemeanor, but spent 3 days in jail while her case was sorted out. Meanwhile, as Sunny sat in that cramped and lonely jail cell for 3 days, Gina hatched a plan. She stole Sunny's driver's license, credit cards, and even her sleek BMW. But that was just the beginning. Using Sunny's checkbook, Gina drained Sunny's bank account before making a beeline to San Diego. And here's where things take a bizarre turn. You see, Gina wasn't content just stealing her sister's possessions. She wanted to steal her identity, and that's what she did. From head to toe, Gina assumed her sister's identity, pretending to be her in every way imaginable, even paying a visit to her sister's ex-boyfriend in San Diego and staying with him for a few days. And even he couldn't tell the difference. In fact, when the ex-boyfriend realized that several checks from his checkbook had gone missing, he reported the theft to police and told them it had been Sunny who stole them, not Gina. But it couldn't have been Sunny because she was in jail. Gina had gone too far, and as soon as Sunny was released, she pressed charges against her sister for identity fraud. This time, Gina would be sentenced to 6 months in a San Diego jail. Tell me if you can relate to this. You wake up not feeling well, and you know you should probably see your doctor. But then you also remember, the whole process of going to see the doctor is a much more miserable experience than just staying in bed for the day. But you figure, I gotta do the right thing, so I'm gonna go see the doctor. So you make your appointment, you get there, 10 minutes early because hey, we wanna be punctual, and then you sit in the reception area for like an hour because there's about 15 people ahead of you. And when you finally see the doctor, they're staring at the clock and rushing you through your appointment because, well, they got a whole waiting room of people to see, only for the doctor to tell you, get some bed rest and drink lots of fluids. And you're left wondering, why do I keep coming here? Well, they're close by. They take my insurance. They have available appointments. But you're compromising. And when it comes to your health, there is no compromise. You don't need to keep going there. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. And you can search by location, availability, and insurance. So literally no compromise here. Because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. And these doctors all have verified reviews from actual real patients. So check out ZocDoc. We're talking about your health here. You deserve it. Go to ZocDoc.com/madness and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/madness. ZocDoc.com/madness. For the next 6 months, Sunny tried her best to forget about Gina. But Gina was spending every waking minute behind bars, scheming of ways to get revenge. It's practically all she could talk about with the other inmates. In jail, Gina was given access to a work furlough program, which allows inmates to leave jail for a period of time each day to work, earn money, and help rehabilitate themselves. But by the end of October 1996, Gina decided she couldn't wait any longer to get back to her sister. So one day, she walked out of the jail on her work furlough and simply never returned. Gina Hahn had just escaped from jail. To lay low, Gina stayed at a crash pad near San Diego, the kind of place where drifters and troubled teens often sought refuge, a place where no one could find you unless they knew where to look. By this time, Gina had already decided she wanted to murder her older twin sister. But she knew she'd need some help if she was going to pull it off. So she began making friends with other drifters at the crash pad. Archie Bryant was just 16 when he met Gina at the crash pad. And despite coming from a household entrenched in drug use and theft, he was a pretty good-natured and easygoing teenager. He often used the pad as refuge from his chaotic home life. And he was often accompanied by his best friend, Jonathan Sayreth, who also had a share of issues at home. Little did the teen boys realize, Gina had a plan in the works that involved them helping her murder her sister. But first, she needed to acquire a gun. So she asked Archie to buy a two-shot .22 caliber Derringer pistol from one of his cousins, claiming she needed it for self-defense. Then one day, when Archie and Jonathan asked Gina for a ride to school in her blue Ford Mustang, she saw an unexpected opportunity. Instead of taking them to school, she offered them each $100 if they'd ride with her to her sister's place in Irvine to recover some of her belongings. Of course they agreed. What teenage boy wouldn't want to skip school and make some quick cash while cruising around in a fancy sports car with an attractive 22-year-old at the wheel? But once their trip got underway, Gina began telling the teenagers what she really had planned. They were going to be accomplices in Sunny's murder plot. The plan was simple. Gina and the boys would drive to Sunny's apartment building. Gina would stay in the car, while Archie and Jonathan pretended to be magazine salesmen and enter Sunny's place. Once inside, they were supposed to attack Sunny and tie her up. And then, For the final act, Gina would come inside and do the deed herself, pulling the trigger and taking her sister's life. In preparation, the trio stopped at an Orange County supermarket where they bought gloves, rope, duct tape, garbage bags, and cleaning supplies. On November 6, 1996, at 3:20 in the afternoon, Archie and Jonathan knocked on Sonny's apartment door, holding a stack of magazines, pretending to be salesmen. But it wasn't Sonny who opened the door. It was a roommate, Helen Kim.
I heard a knock at the door, and I glanced towards the door. So I saw a figure glance through the kitchen window. And so I proceeded to the door, and I went ahead and opened the door. I saw African-American male standing there holding magazines, and he asked if I was interested in buying any of them. And I said, no, I wasn't interested. There was a point when I actually took a step out and I looked to the left side of the door, and I saw an Asian male standing right against the doorway outside. I thought that was it, and I started to close the door. And at that time, the black male, he rushed in the door and he had a gun, and he pushed me back and he told me to get on the ground.
Pointing the small handgun near the left side of Helen's head, Archie forced Helen to lie face down on her living room floor.
And someone started tying my hands behind my back.
By this time, Sunny was locked in her bathroom, whispering on the phone with 911. It didn't take long for Archie and Jonathan to find her and began tying her and taping her up as well. Helen, left alone in the living room, saw an opportunity to make a break for it.
I remember looking up and they were in the other room, so I looked towards the front door and I saw that it was still unlocked. So I tried to get the rope off my hands, and I did. So I ran for the front door, and as soon as I grabbed the knob, I felt someone grab the back of my shirt and pull me down. The black male came to me and he said, I should shoot you for trying that.
Helen was retied and retaped, fully aware her escape attempt had just infuriated the armed intruders. As punishment, they wrapped Helen's entire head in duct tape several times.
They took me into the room and they made me lie by Sunny. After that, the black male came to me and he made me get up and he led me into the bathroom and put me into the bathtub. And then Sunny was brought into the bathtub also.
As the two intruders left the roommates tied up in the bathtub, Archie started rummaging around, looking for something in Sonny's room. Jonathan, meanwhile, walked out of the apartment and into the parking lot where Gina was waiting in the car. He'd come out to tell Gina that Sonny was tied up. The stage was set for Gina to execute her own sister. But before Jonathan could deliver the message, police cruisers began rolling up to the apartment complex. Jonathan quickly hopped into the Mustang with Gina, but Archie was still inside.
I heard a loud voice saying police. I think I heard our sliding glass door open, and I heard someone say shit. And then the black male came into the bathroom and he started to rip the tape off of Sunny's head and the rope, and he said, tell the cops it's a joke, or something like that.
After untying the women, Archie tried to flee the apartment, but was caught by police. When they recovered the handgun Archie had been using, they found it with the safety off, leaving little doubt in the detectives' minds. They just prevented a double homicide. After watching police rescue her sister, Gina and Jonathan drove off in the rented Mustang. But She hadn't left entirely empty-handed. She was now in the possession of Sunny's driver's license. Exactly how she'd gotten her hands on it remains a bit of a mystery, but the most likely explanation was that Jonathan had stolen it during the break-in. Using Sunny's ID, Gina withdrew $5,000 from Sunny's bank account and then attempted to lease a Nissan sports car from a dealer. Her plan was to flee into Mexico using Sunny's identity. However, the lease application would take 24 hours to process, so they were told to come back the next day. Gina and Jonathan then drove to the San Diego Airport rental car service to return the rented Mustang. But when they arrived, police were already there waiting for them. Gina tried claiming she was Sunny and showed them her driver's license. But by that time, police already knew exactly who they were dealing with. Gina, Archie, and Jonathan were each charged with conspiracy to murder Sunny Hahn. They were also charged with burglary and false imprisonment. And in late 1997, they all stood trial together.
Another reason conspiracy is a crime, I charge it when it's an incomplete crime. If you fail to complete your objective, you shouldn't just get away with it. You don't get a walk because you failed to murder somebody. All of the things that led up to it are a crime. Agreeing to kill somebody, agreeing to work together, and going towards that goal, that's the crime.
The trial itself became a media sensation, with the newspapers running hundreds of headlines about the evil twin who attempted to murder her good twin sister. And it seemed almost made for TV that both Gina and her victims, Sunny and Helen, were all attractive young women in their early 20s. But it was when Sunny took the stand that the media went into overdrive. On day one of Sunny's testimony, everything went off without a hitch, and she was the star witness for the prosecution's case. On day two, everything changed. That morning was set to start with Sunny's continued testimony, but Sunny was nowhere to be found. The DA went to her house, and after several minutes of knocking on her door, she answered, groggy and disheveled.
Miss Hahn, you're still under oath. You were late this morning. Could you tell me why?
Okay. I told some people already. What happened was, yesterday I had a big fight with my mom, and then I argued with my boyfriend, and he was so rude, and then we just ended up breaking up again. So what I did was I went to the drugstore and bought 3 boxes of sleeping pills. Each box contains 20-something.
In case you didn't catch it all, Sunny claimed she took 3 boxes of sleeping pills the night before after a fight with her mother and a breakup with her boyfriend. After getting her to the courthouse and putting her up on the stand, it was determined, after only a few minutes, that Sunny was not fit to continue her testimony, and she was taken to the hospital for treatment. It would take more than a week before she was well enough to resume testifying. For the defense, Gina, Archie, and Jonathan all claimed there was no conspiracy to commit murder. Instead, they claimed that their intention had only been to break into the apartment and steal back some of Gina's things that were in Sunny's apartment. But in the end, the circumstantial evidence pointing to a murder plot was enough to convince the jury, and all 3 defendants were found guilty on all counts. To this day, Archie and Jonathan's defense lawyers remain 100% convinced that the 2 teenagers never had any intention of killing anyone that day.
I'll go to my grave believing that my client never intended for anybody to get killed. A couple more cases like this, it'll probably be a pretty short trip.
I feel very strongly that neither Archie Bryant nor my client ever intended for anybody to die.
Before her sentencing, Gina Hahn addressed the court.
Your Honor, I'd like to address the court and express my remorse
regarding the incident, which have caused tremendous pains and sufferings to my family as well as Ms. Helen Kim. I'm deeply sorry for everything that has happened. I'm very, very sorry. I believe this is my first chance and perhaps the only chance I'll have in terms of addressing myself to the court. Therefore, I would like to use this opportunity and clearly state that despite the circumstances surrounding the day of the incident, I had absolutely no intent to kill my twin sister, Sunny Han. I'm truly innocent, and that is the absolute truth. Sunny is my flesh and blood, and she even believes in my innocence 100%. Even though she's not here today in court, I know she supports me. Also, I'd like to address the court and use this opportunity and sincerely apologize to my community for their emotional sufferings due to my terrible incident. I just feel very bad and extremely remorseful for all the pains which I've caused to my sister, to my community, and to my entire family members. And I feel especially bad for Ms. Helen Kim, who was truly an innocent victim in this case.
Of the three co-conspirators, Gina was the only legal adult at the time of the crime. And when it came time to hand down her sentence, the judge threw the book at her.
However, it is obvious that Ms. Han is a danger to society, particularly to her own family. She has repeatedly committed crimes against her family. The documents that were submitted indicate that her mother, stepfather, aunt, uncle, and twin sister have all been victims of her crimes. Here she has been financially supported by her twin sister. When her twin sister was not forthcoming with fulfilling some of her demands, the defendants conspired to kill her. She attempted to enlist several different youths to assist her in this plot, and she did convince two impressionable teenagers to do this work for her. The sentence is as follows. On count one, conspiracy to commit murder, 25 years to life in prison. On the enhancement to count one, under Penal Code Section 12021A1, armed with a firearm, 1 year in prison.
For his role in the murder conspiracy, Archie Bryant was given a 16-year prison sentence. Jonathan Sayreth, because he was just 15 at the time, was given more leniency and sentenced to 8 years behind bars. In 2017, Sunny wrote a letter to Gina's parole board in favor of her twin's early release. Sunny claimed that Gina had grown up and served enough time for her crimes. Gina was paroled in 2018 after serving almost 20 years of her 26 years to life sentence. Since then, she's declined any requests to be interviewed. Sunny has since faded away from the public eye and never quite recovered from the trauma of the trial. In the years after, Sunny had numerous run-ins with the law and eventually cut off all contact with her mother. In a strange turn of fate, no one seems to know where Sunny is today. Many journalists have attempted to contact her, but she's fallen completely off the radar. Her mother, Boo Kim, has reportedly claimed that she believes Sunny may be dead, or at least, dead to her. However, Gina seems to have turned her life around and, true to her sister's word, grown up in prison. After being released, she went on to get an engineering degree and settled down in the San Francisco area. And now I'd like to introduce the podcast, the Private Dicks Podcast.
Have you got a mystery that needs solving?
Where is Amelia Earhart?
We know.
Who the hell was D.B. Cooper?
Bah. Easy.
Bermuda Triangle?
Probably solve that one next.
Here at Private Dicks, we guarantee a mystery solved every episode.
That's with a capital G.
Every second Friday, the Private Dicks take a client, record their session, and solve the world's greatest mysteries.
One by one.
Private Dicks solve them, no problem. God, I love just crushing mysteries. Search up Private Dicks on your favorite podcatcher, and you can solve a mystery too.
The mystery of what's your favorite podcast?
It's Private Dicks. Another one solved.
If you have a mystery to be solved, call 1-855-PRVT-DIX. That's 1-855-PRIVATE-DICKS.
Call 1-855-PRIVATE-DICKS and leave us the rundown of the case. Maybe the Dicks will solve it.
855-PRIVATE-DICKS.
Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To support the show and get access to ad-free episodes, extra content, and Patreon-exclusive episodes, go to patreon.com/madnesspod. To find us on Instagram and Facebook, search The Minds of Madness, and on Twitter using the handle @madnesspod. And also, by checking out our sponsors and using our promo codes, you're also helping support the show. We've got all the links in our episode notes. So until next week, thanks for listening.